The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Well, good morning. It's good to be back with you. This is Andrew Loker filling in for Stephen Fleury. He's busy traveling from Israel up to Europe before heading home. He's had quite a busy week. I don't know exactly where he went. I think either Ireland or Scotland at first, and then down to Israel to spend some time with our volunteers down there and to meet up with Dr. Mazar. Then he flies up into Europe to visit with some of the brethren there before heading home and getting right back into school. So we'll be anxious to have him back on the air next week. It's been good to hear his programs from down in Israel, and also to hear the programs from Richard Palmer and Sam Livingston. It's good to have that variety out there. I was in Texas myself last week and really enjoyed the trip down there, talked to some of our brethren that listen to KPCG and really enjoy the programming. So it's good to have this available to us that really does, I think, in some ways tie the whole world together. Texas was just beautiful. It was springtime down there. It was warm, green, and gave us a good expectation for springtime to arrive up here in Edmond. We're getting there. It's getting a little bit more green, but still a little bit cold. Well, Richard Palmer presented, I thought, a very interesting program yesterday. I found it fascinating to hear the information about the number and the amount of digital uploads to YouTube and other social media sites, just the amount of traffic, engagements, all of those details, the numbers. Really, it's just kind of staggering when you think of the scope of what the internet is and how it's changed lives for so many people. When you think about all those numbers, it's kind of discouraging in a way, too. I think it gives an example of how much time is wasted, how many resources are wasted by individuals that seem to be addicted to social media, addicted to YouTube. Mr. Palmer commented on Nassim Agdam, who killed herself inside the YouTube headquarters just a few days ago, and I believe shot at some other people. And it appears that she was distraught about YouTube policies and how her content was handled and monetized. And again, much has been said about that. I don't want to get into it all that much, but it does reinforce the point that it's very easy to get out of balance very quickly inside the digital world. And it can be really a disastrous place for narcissism, lust, greed, competition, bullying, violence, that type of thing. And here you have an individual that blamed YouTube for their policies. And I don't know everything there, but I thought Richard hit it right on the head when he said, and I'll quote this to you from him yesterday. He said, her videos were not very popular because they were probably not very good. I thought that was kind of funny. But in a sense, it does really make the point that, you know, you can't expect the whole world to embrace you. I don't know. I guess I probably shouldn't get into too much of that yesterday. Dwight Falk also talked on Trumpet Radio Live about her and talked about her background. She appears to be pretty extreme in a way. Now, suffice it to say, when you look at that example, I think you could argue it's just a terrible waste of life. And it's another example of satanic influence and just like a purposelessness that seems so pervasive in our society. And so much of it is tied back to social media. Joel Hilliker on the Trumpet Hour yesterday also talked about addictions and wrote that up in the Trumpet brief that we received. It is something for all of us to think about, and you're just seeing all kinds of, I think, disastrous results for individuals that are just tied so much into that digital world. Well, I wanted to report on some other news. First and most importantly, Gerald Fleury, I believe, landed just not too long ago in Oklahoma City. He's flown over 21,000 miles going between Australia and the Philippines and the United States. It'll be great to hear the stories about how the trip went and all the brethren that met with him, several hundred brethren down in Australia and the Philippines. And really, it was a very aggressive trip. It was a short schedule. It's a long way to fly. Really physically taxing, I'm sure. He spoke to people in Brisbane and Sydney up in the Philippines and really just, I think, probably made their year with that visit. So it's great that that was successful. And again, we're looking forward to hearing more about that trip. We're also nearing the end of the Days of Unleavened Bread. And after those days are completed, things really seem to accelerate. We have graduation coming up with the academy, graduation at the college. Not too long after that, summer camp, then the start of the next school year, the feast. We have a ministerial conference coming up in December this year, so very busy. It's going to be a time that will probably really fly by, but that's good news because that's the way we like it. We like to stay busy. Well, I wanted to comment on a few world news stories before we take a break and then finish up today's program with some material that I did not get to last week. Mr. Andrew Hessong, a minister of ours out in California, sent me an interesting article that, I'll read the headline to you. It says, U.S. suspects cell phone spying devices in Washington, D.C. And the article, it's an interesting piece because it's an admission by the United States government about something that they have not openly admitted before, but were certainly aware that it was going on. This is from AP Newsbreak, and the date is April 3rd. The article says, for the first time, the U.S. government has publicly acknowledged the existence in Washington of what appears to be rogue devices that foreign spies and criminals could be using to track individual cell phones and intercept calls and messages. The use of what are known as cell phone site simulators by foreign powers has long been a concern of the American intelligence agencies and law enforcement, it goes on to say. Homeland Security last year acknowledged in a letter that they sent to Oregon Senator Ron Wyden, and it said that they identified suspected unauthorized cell site simulators in the nation's capital. The agency said it had not determined the type of devices in use or who might have been operating them, nor did it say how many it detected or where. As you read through this article, it is kind of shocking in a sense, but it seems like with each day there's new revelation about our privacy being violated. And now not only individual, just ordinary citizens, but these cell site simulators, they intercept cell phone traffic from Defense Department officials, law enforcement, government. They found one of these cell towers or the simulators outside the White House. The article says the Federal Communications Commission, which regulates the nation's airwaves, they regulate KPCG and take care of that. But they also are tasked with regulating cell phone traffic and that type of thing. They formed a task force on the subject 4 years ago. Listen to this, 4 years ago, but it never produced a report and no longer meets regularly. And so here you find the consequences of that type of sloppy administration in our government over the years now where they know there's a threat. This is spying activity going on. It's criminal activity. They form a committee but then never report on it, ultimately just go away. Again, this article talks about the threat to national security, to economic security. Senator Wyden said in a statement Thursday, leaving security to cell phone companies has proven to be disastrous. He added that the FCC has refused to hold the industry accountable despite repeated warnings and clear evidence that our phone networks are being exploited by foreign governments and hackers. So the threat's there, but we don't do anything about it. In 2014, Goldsmith, another security company, a private security company, they did their own research, conducted sweeps throughout the D.C. area, and, quote, they located suspected unauthorized devices near the White House, the Supreme Court, the Commerce Department, and the Pentagon, among other locations. Now, the problem is that shutting down these illegal sites where they're capturing cell phones is expensive, but it also interferes with law enforcement and our own intelligence community. In at least 25 states, according to this article, the federal agencies are using these cell site simulators to intercept phone calls. Last comment or quote from this article here says, there was no political will to tackle the issue against opposition from the intelligence community and local police forces that were using the devices willy-nilly, as they say here. So in other words, the law enforcement, first of all, they probably couldn't identify who, if it was a proper use of a federal agency or if it was a foreign power. So they don't even know if they can shut them down. And as we know now from what's the revelations of what's going on against the Trump administration, and that's been taking place for years, we see that the nation is spying on itself. We're spying on one another. We're using these type of technologies for political motivations. Really, the message is pretty clear to me. There really is no assurance that our privacy is being respected. There's continual stories of data breaches, sales of private information, and so forth. Facebook is in the news a lot right now. Really, there are some terrible consequences when using technology if you're not careful. And I think that's the big important thing to do is just to be careful. There is another headline that caught my attention yesterday about nightmare bacteria. And it also caught the attention of Dwight Falk, again, who commented on the article yesterday. And I thought he presented a pretty interesting perspective about young people that are shying away from medical services because of the cost. And that's not surprising, nor is it surprising that these bacteria are becoming more resistant to antibiotics. We heard warnings about these type of mutated bacteria strains for years. And it seems like those warnings are now being fulfilled. I'll quote the same article he did yesterday and then add another article or two. This is from Fox News website. The article title is Nightmare Bacteria Cases Seen in 27 States, according to the CDC. The article opens by saying more than 220 cases of breed of nightmare bacteria with new or rare antibiotic-resistant genes have been found in 27 states, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said in a report released Tuesday. The CDC has warned of the antibiotic-resistant bacteria for years, but these, quote, nightmare bacteria are virtually untreatable and capable of spreading genes that make them impervious to most antibiotics, according to a Scientific American report. A little further down, it says about 2 million Americans get sick from antibiotic-resistant bacteria each year, and 23,000 people die, according to the CDC. A doctor that I'm not going to try to pronounce his name, he's a senior scholar at Johns Hopkins University Center for Health Security. He told Scientific American that the unusual genes discussed in the CDC report were truly the worst of the worst. And the article talks about it spreading through hospitals and other healthcare facilities, which I'll talk about in just a moment. They said that doctors liken the spread of nightmare bacteria and other antibiotic-resistant germs to a wildfire. It just spreads so easily. I found a report from the CDC from 2002 that talked about the number of people that are infected with bacteria when they go into a hospital or other healthcare facility for some other purpose. They're not going in there to be treated for the infection that they get. It might be a broken bone or some other reason. But while in the hospital or in some other healthcare facility, they contract or come across these germs that make them quite sick. This report, the objective of the report says it's a national estimate of the number of healthcare-associated infections, HAI, and deaths in the United States. So in 2002, they were trying to count the number of people that went into a facility not having these bacteria in their system, but being infected while in the care of a healthcare facility. The result of this report, again, just in a synopsis form here, says in 2002, the estimated number of HAIs in the United States hospitals adjusted to include federal facilities was approximately 1.7 million. So in 2002, 1.7 million people that went to a hospital, a healthcare facility, were infected with some form of disease or bacteria. And again, it results in death in a certain percentage. Now, that's awful. That's awful. That was in 2002. I struggled to find something more up to date. I do have a report here from 2014 which is a little bit more recent. This is from National Public Radio. And the title of their piece is Fewer People Are Getting Infections in Hospitals, But Many Still Die. They say hospital-acquired infections continue to be a big problem in healthcare, with 4% of patients getting a new infection while hospitalized, the study finds, and 11% of those infections turn deadly. 4% maybe doesn't sound all that bad, but that's one out of every 25 people that come into a healthcare facility get infected. And then of that, over 10% end up dying. How many people visit healthcare facilities each day? They're quoting the director of the CDC. This is back in 2014. Tom Friedman is his name. He said, although there has been some progress, today and every day, more than 200 Americans with healthcare-associated infections will die during their hospital stay. That translates to more than 70,000 deaths a year caused by hospital infections. Think about that. 200 people a day die. Not just infected, but they actually die in the hospitals because they caught something in the hospital. They have other articles associated with this one. Infections with nightmare bacteria are on the rise in U.S. hospitals. Another article, antibiotics can't keep up with nightmare superbugs. Toward the end of this article, it says we need new germ-killing technology, including new vaccines that target common hospital infections. So, again, just trying to treat the bacteria with more drugs, which will probably make them more resistant. They don't know what to do, but really he gives us the answer here, but I don't think he really understands what he's saying. He says we need to be much better as healthcare delivery systems in this country at preventing hospital admissions and getting people out of the hospital much faster. So the healthcare industry needs to keep people out of the hospitals, or if they do get in there, get them out. He says, because if you're not in the hospital, you won't get a healthcare-associated infection. And that's exactly right. But that's exactly the problem. Too many people are going to the hospitals. Too many people are taking antibiotics, and it's making these strains more deadly. There's the opioid crisis. Just a lot of terrible news associated with the healthcare industry. Well, we'll take a short break here, and when we return, we'll discuss what Gerald Flory has labeled a mysterious Bible prophecy. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical. But world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. Is the supernatural intervention of the Son of God really a possibility? This pamphlet will help you study the answer. It's called The Spectacular Return of Jesus Christ. Perhaps you believe in Jesus Christ as a Savior, but do you also believe in Him as a prophet? In John 14:3, Jesus forecasted, "If I go, I will come again." In Mark 13, Jesus gave details about when He would come again. He described the latter days. First, tribulation, then heavenly signs. Then they shall see the Son of Man coming. The book of Acts says Jesus would return the same way He left 2,000 years ago. You can see that in Acts 1:11. The Apostle Paul wrote extensively about Christ's return and His literal worldwide rule. James said, "Be patient unto the coming of the Lord." James 5:7. The Apostle John said that when Christ appears, the first fruits shall be like Him. 1 John 3:2. And Peter spoke of scoffers who would come in the latter days and would willingly ignore the promise of Christ's coming. So if you believe in Jesus Christ, and you believe what he actually said as reported in the Bible, you have to believe that Jesus Christ is coming again. The book of Revelation describes God's coming kingdom in incredible detail. Revelation 1 says that when Christ comes down from clouds, every eye shall see him. Revelation 11 specifies that the actual, literal kingdoms of this world will become the actual, literal kingdoms of Jesus Christ. Prove this earth-shaking possibility for yourself. Go to thetrumpet.com and request The Spectacular Return of Jesus Christ. The Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back. The Middle East is truly a hot spot in the world. I don't think that's a surprise to anybody. When you study the region, it's a confluence of religion and commerce, culture, and it's always been a crucible for war. Much has been said recently by the Trumpet staff regarding the Hamas march of return, and it's being reported in a terribly biased way, as we've been talking about. Just new news stories almost every day. More headlines today about a renewed push and their efforts to violate Israeli space. And the world basically holds Israel responsible. Well, I'll leave it to the Trumpet staff to give you more details. They've studied that more thoroughly than I have. But I wanted to look at a different problem in the same region. In 1991, the Los Angeles Times wrote an article entitled Casualties of Middle East Wars. And basically, it's a pretty short article. They just chronicle the number of wars and the number of injured and wounded going back to the 1948 Arab-Israeli War and then carrying it through up to the Gulf War. The report shows that 12 major wars, including some civil wars in that region, have been fought in the last 70 years. And really, if you, I'll read through the list of these wars, and you'll notice that the same players, the same countries and nations are still embroiled in conflict to this day. Going back to 1948, again, the Arab-Israeli War. 1956, Israel's Sinai Campaign. 1961 through 1969, the Yemen Civil War. Then, of course, the Six-Day Arab-Israeli War of 1967. Arab-Israeli War of Attrition, March 1969. Jordan's War with the PLO and Syria in 1970. In 1973, another Arab-Israeli War. In 1975 through 1990, Lebanese Civil War with an estimated 150,000 people killed and more than 1 million, a quarter of the population, was displaced. The Israeli invasion of Lebanon in 1982 is listed, followed by South Yemen Civil War in January 1986. Moving forward to the Iran-Iraq War, 1980 through 1988. And then they finish with the Gulf War, starting January 17th through February 28th, 1991, where they say that 20,000 Iraqis were killed in the first 26 days of the war. At least that's their estimate of the number killed there. I saw another headline from the LA Times. This is from, 2013, and they said, counting the cost of war, nearly 500,000 Iraqis have been killed, according to a new survey. That's between 2003 and 2011 as a direct or indirect result of the conflict. And so you see these major conflicts in that area just year after year. Back in March this year, just a couple of weeks ago, we passed the eight-year anniversary, or the eight-year mark that was the start of the civil war in Syria. And if you've ever read stories, and I'm sure you have over the years, it's an especially grisly war where chemical weapons have been used. There have been massive amounts of casualties, terrible destruction. Nearly 20,000 children are believed to have been killed. There's really no semblance of society at all. It's just a very brutal war. Now, yesterday, we had an announcement from the White House that we're taking steps to evacuate our troops at some point out of the Syrian conflict. And it's understandable because it's really a very complex problem. There's no easy solution. There is an article yesterday, again, on Fox News. It's actually an opinion piece by Harry Kazianis. He's a defense studies expert. And he said the announcement by the White House on Wednesday that, quote, the military mission to eradicate ISIS in Syria is coming to a rapid end, end quote. Excuse me. He said that's moving in the right direction. President Trump understands that the last thing we need to do is to be sucked into another Middle East war that could go on for decades. The Washington Post reported, quote, President Trump has instructed military leaders to prepare to withdraw U.S. troops from Syria, but has not set a date for them to do so, according to senior administration officials. Further down in the piece, it says there are many reasons why the president is right to favor an exit from Syria. First, First, America has fulfilled its primary mission of defeating and destroying the Islamic State. I'll read more on that in just a moment. The second reason why this opinion piece where he feels it's a good reason to withdraw, he says, second, and this is the key point, President Trump in many respects, is in many respects a foreign policy realist. And that realism demands a prudent and thorough assessment of America's foreign policy moves and expenditures of resources. Washington is engaged in a chessboard that includes staring down Russia in Europe, battling China across multiple domains in Asia, trying to confront a growing North Korean nuclear threat, and many other challenges around the world. And as you'll see here as we move on, it does really fulfill prophecy. America is engaged all over the world and yet very ineffective now. The third point in this opinion piece is that America is simply tired and can't carry on with this conflict. Tired. Not able to keep up. And what does that do? Does everybody take a break and step to the side? Well, of course not. Other powers move in. In May 2012, that's about 6 years ago now, Gerald Flurry taped a Key of David program entitled Psalm 83 is Being Fulfilled. Since that time, we've taped three different Key of David programs on this subject. There are dozens of articles and other videos. In fact, there's a 90 seconds video on our trumpet.com website that gives you a quick overview of the Psalm 83 alliance that is prophesied to take place over there in the Middle East. Well, I wanted to just play to you a short clip from Mr. Flurry's program to kind of set the stage for what we'll talk about the rest of today.
Greetings, everyone. A major prophecy is being fulfilled in Syria, and it's going to change the course of mighty nations on this earth and shake the foundation of this world as never before. And that's going to include America and Britain as well. There is a mysterious prophecy in Psalm 83 that prophesies there's going to be a dramatic and even a violent shift in many nations in this end time that's going to lead right into an all-out war in this world. And it's going to include just about all nations. But you can see it now as you never could see it before. And it's really all about a revolution that's going on in the nation of Syria. And the power behind most of what I'm talking to you about today is in Germany. Just as we have been prophesying for some 70 years. But this Psalm 83 indicates that Syria is going to have a break with Iran, that they're going to break away. Now, you don't see much of that in the headlines today, but you do see enough violence there to see where it might be able to do that.
It's very insightful analysis that God gives us through prophecy. Gerald Flurry, for nearly 6 years, has been talking about this, and it seems very improbable that Syria would break ties with Russia and Iran, and that somehow Germany's going to be involved in this. Really, it's a very interesting prophecy that I think has captured the attention of our readers for years. I read a UN report from April 2016 the other day, and they estimate that over 400,000 people have been killed in the Syria civil war. And really, again, if you analyze it, like Gerald Flurry said there, it's a battlefield for major world powers. Here you have clashing giants in this this geographical region that's just been torn by warfare forever, for as long as humans have lived in that area. And as you look through the headlines and you study what's going on there, it's not so much just about Syria, is it? The report that I read kind of focused on children and the children that have been imprisoned, children that have been tortured. This is children in Syria that are going through some of these very inhumane experiences. As of early March 2018, it's been estimated that 19,800 children have been killed in Syria. Now, I know this is a UN report, and I don't absolutely trust it, but it did reinforce another article that I read several weeks ago. And you'll have to forgive me. I couldn't put my hand on the article. I know I printed it off, so I'll just kind of paraphrase it from memory. It was a piece by a journalist, photographer and video photog that's over there in Syria. And his job is to report and send pictures back of the destruction that's taking place. The article was quite liberal, but it did show the suffering of the children. It chronicled their lives living in basements, schooling underground if they were even able to go to school. They weren't able to go outside, no fresh light, very little fresh water or food to speak of, just death and bombing and absolute hopelessness. Now, the purpose of this journalist's article was to point out that nobody really cares anymore. He's been there since the beginning of the Civil War. His pieces used to draw a lot of attention. His pictures were widely circulated. But his point was, now 8 years later, nobody seems to really care. It's the same pictures of suffering families. It's the same pictures of a war-torn neighborhood. And his point is that, well, people have just moved on, but the conflict still rages. Now, when you look at the Psalm 83 Alliance, it does tell you an awful lot about what's coming. And again, it's not about Syria. In a way, it's like a staging ground that ultimately moves its way down to Jerusalem. We have a fantastic reprint article entitled A Mysterious Prophecy, written by Gerald Fleury. And it goes through this subject and gives you a lot of understanding. Again, we have other videos you can watch, Key of David programs. I want to quote kind of extensively from this piece here, because really Syria is ground zero for some developing alliances. And as Gerald Fleury said in that program 6 years ago, you can already see them coming together. And it is very interesting. It does really build faith because it reinforces exactly what the Bible is talking about. All of these events are tied to the destruction of end time Israel. And it involves Germany, as Gerald Fleury said, and it talks about a time right after the King of the North responds to a push from the King of the South. Quoting from this article, it says, Psalm 83 of the Bible is an end-time prophecy of Germany allying with several moderate Arab nations. It shows that these nations are about to get control of the Middle East. What they do after that is going to be the ultimate shock to America, Britain, and the Jewish nation. Psalm 83 is fulfilled almost immediately after a German-led Europe conquers Iran and radical Islam. And then the article quotes Daniel 11, verses 40 through 43. And then it switches over to Psalm 83, where it talks about, keep not silent, O God, hold not your peace. And the end of verse 3 says, they have taken crafty counsel against your people, Israel, and consulted against your hidden, or your hidden ones, as it could read. And so this alliance that forms is really anti-Israeli. It's anti-end-time Israel, and not just physical Israel, but also God's special ones, his called-out ones, that at that time are hidden or in a place of safety. The article says these enemies are also against God's hidden or treasured people. And then he says that God's church is out there explaining what's going on. However, most people, according to this article, most people pay little attention until they become victims. The world could understand all of these terrible end time events if they would find this very elect and heed the Bible-based warning. That's the work that we're doing, that you're supporting. we do have solutions. We can explain what's coming in the very near future. Gerald Flory says, we are seeing terrifying events all around the world, and they are intensifying. But all the bad news is a sign of the best news mankind could possibly hear. And he talks about the return of Jesus Christ. Listen to this. Down a little bit further in the article, it says, the leader of Iran, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, this is an article written back in 2011, but he says, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad has vowed to wipe the Jewish nation off the map. We've heard that before. That's still a statement that's being made today. But listen to this. The enemies of Psalm 83 have what appears to be an even deeper hatred. They even want to obliterate the biblical name of Israel forever. This article explains who's in the alliance. Again, quoting Psalm 83, this is verse 5 through 8. It says, for they have consulted together and have one consent. They are confederate against you, the tabernacle of Edom, the Ishmaelites of Moab, the Hagarenes, and it goes on and carries on there. The article says, Hagarenes anciently dwelt in the land known today as Syria. Iran, Iraq, Egypt, Libya, Ethiopia are missing from this list. If you go back and study Psalm 83, you don't see any of those nations named there. That's because they'll be allied with Iran when they are conquered by a German-led Europe. And so this is really such a great prophecy because all of these world powers that are engaged in some kind of conflict or some kind of alliance now with one another, things are going to change. And that's what this prophecy is about. History proves there's never been an alliance of those Psalm 83 nations. And in a sense, it makes a lot of sense when you consider that the Muslims allied themselves with Germany in World War II. They knew that Hitler was going after the Jews that supported the Muslim thinking at the time. And so it's no surprise that there's this connection between Germany and the Muslims. The article kind of wraps up. It's not too long of an article. It's only two or three pages. But it talks about God accomplishing his plan. And then it draws attention to the budding relationships between some of these moderate Arab nations and Germany. And it's especially visible when you look at military shipments and military support between Saudi Arabia and Germany and some of the other moderate nations there. In another article, September 2017 from thetrumpet.com, it draws attention to Turkey. Turkey is part of that Psalm 83 alliance. Germany, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Syria, Lebanon, southern Lebanon or the Hezbollah area, and Gaza. All of them allied against end-time Israel. All of them allied against Iran and the King of the South. Really, it's a fascinating study to get into. Now, I wanted to give you a little background about the civil war in Syria. This comes from a March 18th, 2018 report from Al Jazeera. So please forgive the sketchy source and try to think beyond the politics here. They're just chronicling some dates and times, and that's what I want to draw attention to. They ask by what caused the uprising, and they pinpoint it back to the Arab Spring. In 2011, according to this article, successful uprisings that became known as the Arab Spring toppled Tunisia's and Egypt's presidents. This gave hope to Syrian pro-democracy activists. So we go back to the Arab Spring, and we can thank the Obama administration for stirring that pot. The article then, the next point, they say that March in 2011, peaceful protests erupted in Syria as well after 15 boys were detained and tortured for writing graffiti in support of the Arab Spring. One of the boys, a 13-year-old, was killed after having been brutally tortured. The next point in the article, the Syrian government led by President Bashar al-Assad responded to protests by killing hundreds of demonstrators and imprisoning many more of his own people. By July 2011, defectors from the military formed the Free Syrian Army, a rebel group, again, according to Al Jazeera here. In 1982, they talked about Bashar's father ordered a military crackdown on the Muslim Brotherhood. Again, it gets to be kind of complex over there, but you can find plenty of information to understand what's going on in Syria. Now, I wanted to skip ahead in their article to talk about the international involvement. They say Russia entered the conflict in 2015 and has been an Assad government ally since then. Regional actors, they say the governments of majority Shia, Iran, and Iraq, and Lebanon-based Hezbollah have supported Assad, while Sunni-majority countries, including Turkey, Qatar, and Saudi Arabia, supported anti-Assad rebels. Again, we see the right people there mentioned in this conflict. Since 2016, Turkish troops have launched several operations against the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, or ISIL, also known as ISIS, near its border, as well as Kurdish groups armed by the United States. An anti-ISIL coalition backed by U.S. Supported rebel groups are mentioned here. And then Israel, as mentioned, carried out air raids inside Syria, reportedly targeting Hezbollah and pro-government fighters and facilities. The first time Syrian air defenses shot down an Israeli warplane was in February 2018. The article kind of wraps up by talking about the chemical red line that was crossed during the Obama administration, the April 2017 U.S. attack using 59 cruise missiles. The CIA has been involved over there. Russia, since September 2015, is involved. They're actively bombing what they consider terrorist groups in Syria. And so you go on and you read what's taking place over there. And again, it's highly complex. From The Economist, March 1st, 2018, the title is Why the War in Syria is Hotting Up, or Why It's Getting More Hot and Aggressive. It says the Islamic State has collapsed, but the fighting goes on. For a moment, it looked as though Syria's seven-year war, which has killed more than 400,000 people and contributed to the largest refugee crisis in recent history, might be winding down. As 2017 drew to a close, the so-called caliphate of Islamic State had disintegrated. The forces of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad and rebels fighting to dethrone him had largely stopped killing each other. Russia, which had intervened to save Mr. Assad, said its mission was basically accomplished and had promised to bring its troops home. Now, the United States made a similar announcement. This is from former Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, and he made this comment on January 19th, 2018. He says that the United States plans an indefinite military presence in Syria following the defeat of Islamic State groups' so-called caliphate. But what does that mean for another band of freedom fighters on the ground there, asks the U.S. News and World Report. So Russia says it's come to a close. The United States says that they've accomplished their mission. The United States back in January said that they were going to leave troops there. Yet there was a White House announcement yesterday that says we're going to withdraw troops. Again, a very complex situation. Going back to the Economist article, it says, but since then, since Russia and since the United States basically said that the Islamic State was defeated, since that time, the calm has shattered. The regime has turned its guns on rebels. Turkey has sent troops over the border to battle Kurdish forces. Americans have killed Russians. And longstanding tensions between Iran and Israel have flared. Why is Syria's war heating up again? Good question. Well, because Bible prophecy says it will. Because it's leading to something much bigger. They might think the war is over, but I really don't think any of them are that deceived. There's a lot at stake there. Carrying on down a little bit further in this Economist piece, it says American troops... Rex Tillerson said American troops would remain in Kurdish-held parts of Syria until ISIS is no longer considered a threat and a political solution to the war has been found. And that, in turn, infuriated Turkey, which is a NATO ally, which now starts to draw Europe into this battle. The U.S. is not helping out. The United States is under a curse. And Germany ultimately is going to have to come into this region because it's going to spiral out of control. The article says America's vow to stay in Syria has also angered Russia, which backed Turkey's operation in Afrin. Lastly, it says worse may be on the way. Iran's influence in Syria seems to be increasing as it seeks to cement its position in order to ensure the supply of weapons to its Lebanese proxy, Hezbollah. Iranian-backed militias are creeping closer to the Israeli-occupied Golan Heights. In February, Israel shot down an Iranian drone that had entered its airspace. And then it talks about Israeli fears grow in step with Iran's influence. And so you see Iran really starting to push its muscle around. And Syria is plagued by all of these actors seeking their own agendas. They're, in a way, trying to get out, in other ways, control the situation there. This is from, I think this is Jerusalem Post. Jerusalem Online, excuse me. This is from March 25th, just a few days ago. It says, explosion on Lebanon-Syria border reported as Israelis strike a Hezbollah outpost. It says, according to some media outlets, the explosion was an Israeli attack on Hezbollah outpost near the border with Syria. So Israel is fighting inside Syria. So is Russia, the United States. Iran is there. Syria, the rebels, Turkey. Germany is going to be drawn into this conflict. Now, think about this. This is from, again, Jerusalem Online, and also from March 25th. And it's a quote from the Israeli Defense Force intelligence chief. He said, Iran has become bolder since 2015 deal. Iran has become bolder in its support for terrorism and its missile development since the signing of the nuclear deal in 2015, according to this general who's the head of the Israeli Military Intelligence Directorate. He says Iran is using the territories of Syria against Israel in plain sight and in complete contrast to Syrian interest. He talks about the risk to Israel from that, and ultimately he says the determining factor in 2018 will be Iran's activity in the region, and perhaps even more than that, the retaliations to it. So who's going to start to retaliate against Iran? Well, the Israelis are flying aircraft over Iranian airspace. Things are again, heating up. You see Hamas troubling Israel. And you see fighting from Turkey inside Syria. Again, all of this does not portend any type of peace in the area. In fact, it seems to be getting worse. Business Insider from... I don't think I grabbed the date here. I'm sorry. I think this is March 2018. It talks about why Russia is so involved in the Syrian civil war. They give 3 points. The first point is that if Assad fell, they don't know who would take over. And so they want to control that to make sure that it's not a pro-Western power. The second point that they give is counterterrorism. Moscow shares Washington's interest in combating terrorist groups like ISIS and Al-Qaeda. That's true to a certain extent, according to this article. They talk about Russia takes a broader view of terrorist groups than the United States does. And so, again, Russia's concerned about who's going to be there. They're worried about terrorism that's bred in the area that could be used against Russian interests. And thirdly, they talk about challenging the U.S. role. And this is important. This is what the Syrian conflict is revealing. Who is willing to fight? Who has the strength to fight? The Russians are testing the waters. The Iranians are testing the waters. They're provoking Israel. Turkey is testing the waters. And Germany and the European Union is on the outside looking in. And the media is ignoring that. But Bible prophecy tells us to be much more careful, much more aware of what's really going on there. Two final articles here from Business Insider again, March 2018. The Army's military review just declared the U.S. was defeated in Syria. So a self-analysis by the U.S. military, the U.S. Army, they say that we've been defeated there. Again, if this is a breeding ground for something that is going to lead ultimately to the Great Tribulation, we ourselves recognize our waning power. This article is a publication. The U.S. Army concludes that Russia has, quote, won at least a partial victory in Syria and done so with impressive efficiency, flexibility, and coordination between military and political action. Russia won. We lost, and we want to pull our troops out now. We can't afford to get bogged down in another Middle East conflict. And so as the United States withdraws, Russia and Iran stand there. And we're going to see the king of the South kind of isolate itself and provoke. And they will get a response from Europe, as Daniel 11 promises. Well, I won't take time to go through this other article. It was written by Callum Wood, one of our staff writers. He's based down in Australia. He wrote a great piece entitled Europe Promises Military Aid to Lebanon. And he asked the question, why do the Europeans want to strengthen the Lebanese armed forces? And if you go through and read it, he ties it back to the Psalm 83 alliance. He explains how the area is just being loaded with weapons. This truly is a region of the world that we need to watch, that we focus on. And you'll only hear about this alliance on this network with through thetrumpet.com, through the Key of David program, through KPCG programming. We'll explain to you what's going on. The world is oblivious, even though everybody's kind of getting into position. Everybody's getting armed and ready for conflict. This is a terrible time, and Satan is full of wrath. And with the technologies that are present today, it wouldn't take much for an all-out conflict to be ignited in that crucible of war that we find in the Middle East. All of this is being staged, and these are the initial steps that ultimately lead to all-out warfare down in Jerusalem and the return of Jesus Christ. Well, I'm so excited to read the news. I'm excited to watch old Key of David programs, new Key of David programs, read these articles. We really can understand Bible prophecy, and we can know exactly where events are taking us in the world. If you're part of supporting this work, you also are familiar with the spiritual side of our efforts. We not only talk about geopolitics and Bible prophecy, but we talk about Christian living. The spring holy days are upon us, and we're just about done with the days of unleavened bread. And God's plan is one that includes all humans that have ever lived. And as we go through these holy days, we have reinforced in our minds that this is a plan of hope. We understand that God wants to have family, and a horrible price was paid by a very willing God family to bring lasting peace, to bring us into his family, to end the wars that are fought in the Middle East. The message of the Bible is clear. Mankind has to conquer sin. We don't have to conquer other nations, other ideologies. Mankind has to look inward and conquer sin. We have to stop allowing Satan to influence all the warfare and fighting. The killing does have to stop. The source of the problem must be addressed. When we see articles and pictures, we can't just be cold to those. We have to respond, and it starts with looking at ourselves. Now, I can't help but to get a little emotional when I read about Syria. I think that's true for all of us when you see the suffering that's taking place there. But it is a sign of hope if you understand prophecy. Syria and Jerusalem really are focal points for our attention right now as prophecies are being fulfilled. So I encourage you to stay tuned to KPCG. I encourage you to read the daily editions to our websites, to watch the Key of David program and our other video programs, to stay close to God. We're in for some amazing times just ahead, and it all ends with peace, true, eternal, godly peace. May God speed that day. It's been nice being with you. Have a good afternoon.